You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. And I appreciate you taking the time to be here at the Kevin Smith Show. Now, for those of you who are joining us for the very, very first time, welcome aboard. I'm delighted you're here, and I think you're going to be delighted to be here as well. We always have a good time. And in addition, we always have interesting guests, and tonight is certainly no different. We've got a really, really special guest with us tonight. If you are new and you don't know anything about the Kevin Smith Show, this is your first time to be here, then you need to know that we have a free weekly newsletter. It's called the K-Files E-Zine, and you can get yours just by going over to my website, which is kevinsmithshow.com, and subscribe. You'll see the little button there. It's got red letters, and it says K-Files E-Zine. And you just click that, and it takes a few seconds, and you can subscribe. There's no strings attached. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. And we don't let anybody use our email list. We don't rent it out or sell it or anything like that. So you're not going to be spammed as a result of subscribing, so be sure you subscribe. Quick note about Megapack. I still have four left. Now, what we did, Megapack is the 20 of the lost shows, the ones that were on the computer that crashed and we thought they were gone forever. Well, we've recovered some of them, and this Megapack has 20 really hot shows on there, and you can go over to my website and you'll see the ad for the Megapack. And we got a special deal. The special deal is $15. I throw in the shipping and handling plus a bonus gift where you can download my book called Gods in the Garden at no extra cost. You download it immediately once you buy the Megapack. Now, there's only 50 of those. Megapack is going to be available after those 50 are gone, but that special deal is not going to be available. Okay, it'll go up to regular price. Now, right now, it's less than $1 a show. $15 for 20 shows? Come on. Plus two bonus gifts. Got four of those left. If you want them, you need to order them. I predict they'll go tonight. And then, you know, the first four orders that come in tonight, get them. And then after that, it goes up to regular price. So grab it while the grabbing is good, all right? The K-Files E-Zine came out on time this last week. And it was good that it did because we, of course, got mangled by a lightning strike, our internet connection did, and we were not able to send out one issue of the K-Files E-Zine, and we were not able really to function normally for a week. Well, things are back to normal now, as I think you can tell, and we will be sending out the K-Files E-Zine on time this week. And provided we don't get struck by lightning, hit by a tornado, invaded by a hurricane, or cracked up by an earthquake, it'll go out on time. My guest this evening is Paola Harris, and boy, I'll tell you what, if anybody knows the world of UFOs and exopolitics, it's this lady. She'll be joining us on the other side of this break. Strap yourself into your seat and hang on. This is going to be interesting. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is, I guess you could say, world famous, and that would not be an overstatement, perhaps even an understatement. Paola Harris is a researcher. She is a journalist. She is a writer. She is just phenomenally talented, and she is very, very much involved in the world of UFOs and exopolitics. The last time that, well, not the last time, but I started to say the last time I talked with you, Paola, was you were in Italy, but that was not true. That was the first time I talked to you, and it was several years ago. But you are here now. Are you here permanently?
Yes, I moved back to the United States, Kevin, in last year, June. And but I'm not permanently here all the time because in May of this year I was in Italy for a month, and I'm on my way back to Italy in November. And when I go back to Italy, you know, I have family there and friends there. I do a couple of conferences, but I also do some in Switzerland and in France. So what I do is provide a service where a lot of the news from the United States goes abroad. So I'm kind of the bridge of news. I consider myself kind of a cosmic Lois Lane.
A cosmic Lois Lane. Okay. But you're based here now.
Yeah, I'm based in Boulder, Colorado, and it was where I lived before I spent my 15 years in Rome, because I did live in Rome for 15 years, and came back to beautiful Boulder, Colorado. Colorado is just beautiful, and I can work here very well. It's a university town, and just love living here.
How did you get involved in exopolitics and in the world of UFOs?
Well, it's not a normal thing, Kevin. You know, the people choose this. I became involved in 1979 when I saw Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and I was very emotionally, I had an emotional reaction to the ending, especially, you know, that scene where Francois Truffaut, who plays Jacques Vallée, you know, had the encounter with the beings there at that landing, and you know, I looked into the film and I realized that one of the consultants for that film with Spielberg was Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who is a famous astronomer, and he worked at Northwestern University in Chicago. So, you know, as coincidence would have it, I went to Chicago for a wedding and went into the Center for UFO Studies, and there was Dr. Hynek himself. And he basically asked me if I'd start doing some of his Italian translations. And when I started doing that, I realized that this was real. This was, you know, that everything that happened in that film was real, that Hynek was actually archiving all the sightings worldwide. I was doing his Italian translations. But we became very good friends. He came to Boulder, Colorado several times. I went on vacation with him and his wife. And until he died in 1986, I was very involved with the real sightings and the real reports that were coming in. As you know, Dr. Hynek was the chief scientist for Project Blue Book. So from that point on, when I went to Italy, since I had worked with Hynek, I began writing for Italian magazines and appearing on television and so forth. And I did this for a number of years until about 3 years ago, where I went from the sightings and that kind of thing to exopolitics. And exopolitics is basically admitting that there is an extraterrestrial presence on Earth, and what are we going to do about it? And that's basically what it is. It's policy decisions on the extraterrestrial presence on Earth.
All right. Now, you worked with, as you said, Dr. J. Allen Hynek. And you said you began to
realize. It's really hard to hear you.
I understand. There's not a thing I can do about it. You'll just have to listen close. You worked with Dr. J. Allen Hynek, and you said that he was archiving. These things that were in the movie were real, and he was archiving the real stuff. Did you ever get a chance to talk with him about that last scene where there was an exchange of humans and extraterrestrials?
No, I didn't really get a chance to talk with him about that, but I did go with him on a lot of investigations, and when he would ask contactees about their experiences, he was very, very compassionate, kind, and listened a lot. It was only after I started working with different people, and Colonel Philip Corso was one of my witnesses, and a lot of people in the military, and when I talked to Grant Cameron up in Canada, that I realized landings had happened, and there had been contact. And the famous meeting of President Eisenhower in the 1950s at Holloman really did happen. So, you know, all of this stuff was just a background that was written into the film, but I'm convinced that Spielberg knows something or knew something because he's too far involved in the disclosure part of this.
All right, did you, you said that you began to realize, for instance, the meeting between Eisenhower and extraterrestrials at Holloman Air Force Base really did happen. Is that because of your conversations with Colonel Corso?
I didn't hear that last part.
Is that because of your conversations with Colonel Corso?
It's really, really difficult. I can't hear like anything. But you know, I don't know what you're asking me. But the thing that I can tell your listeners is that, you know, the part that the witnesses I've had and the interviews I've done that are all in my book, Connecting the Dots, Making Sense of the UFO Phenomenon, all of that comes from military and intelligence people and astronauts. And I don't think those people lie. They have no reason to lie. They're basically, in the last years of their life, you know, telling me word for word, because all the interviews I have in my book are word for word on audio tape that I've transcribed, what the real story is. And we're way past, I don't know how to tell everybody this, but we're way past sighting stage. I mean, the sightings, there's so many sightings archived, and there's so many sightings that MUFON has put together and all over the world, even when I was in Europe, that we need to stop looking at the sightings and start looking at the policy issues and how we're going to deal with this.
All right, I'm going to take another stab. I've got this so loud that we're absolutely peeling the paint off of the walls for our listeners. I'll take another stab at it. You said that the Eisenhower meeting at Holloman Air Force Base was real. How did you come to that conclusion?
You mentioned the Holloman Air Force Base case?
That's correct. How did you come to the conclusion that's a real deal?
Well, there's a researcher named Art Campbell that did some research on a place. Dr. Michael Sala has talked to, you know, relatives of military men that were actually there. Plus, MUFON put out a audio tape some years back of the Holloman sighting. That's another proof. And then there's also in a much known, much little known film, a cassette called Contact Has Begun that has Jacques Vallée in it. There's a little clip that Jamie Chandra, one of the early researchers, and Bob Emmenager put of a object landing in the desert, and if that is a real clip. Now, about what actually happened to Eisenhower, he what was told to the people was that he had a dentist appointment and disappeared going into Palm Springs. And what was found out later by, you know, Dr. Sala, who did the research with the relative there, was that what had actually happened was that there was a landing. The landing, by the way, could be echoed in a film that you know about called The Day the Earth Stood Still, that the warning came the way it did from the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still. And look at the coincidence that this year that film will be re-released. So isn't that weird that film basically said we had to watch our nuclear capacity, and the Earth had to kind of get its act together before it would have contact, and that film is being re-released this year.
All right, now, based on the testimonies of all of these people that you've mentioned, you're absolutely confident that there has been ET contact. Is that right?
Yeah, but not only this. I mean, not only the Holloman case. I talked at length in England to Larry Warren. And if you've watched the Larry King Live specials, the people that were involved with the Rendlesham Forest Bentwaters case had a landing on the Bentwaters, Woodbridge Bentwaters base in England. And that was an actual landing. That wasn't a sighting. And Larry Warren said he was present when the UFO came down. He said there was film footage there, that there was interaction. He saw beings come out of the craft and interact with some of the military there. And that when that case, the Rendlesham Forest case, is another example of not only landing but interaction with military people. And Larry Warren was present, and he was military. So we have a lot of statements from these people at different times of history where there have been landings and interaction. Now, what they actually said, nobody knows. And who they actually are, nobody knows. But it is, again, in that particular case, it was around a military installation.
All right. Now, you've spent a lot of time talking with people like Philip Corso. Philip Corso, as would be expected, has come under criticism. And there are people that say that Philip Corso's testimony was, he overstated his position, and some of the things he said were not true. And then there are other people who have said, oh, he was absolutely true. How did you take Philip Corso?
Oh, that's... okay, now you hit on a real controversial situation here. Colonel Philip Corso was the head of intelligence, first of all, let's remember, during World War II in Rome. So we're talking about a man who was the head of intelligence in 1944. We checked out all his credentials. We know he was there. And he also worked at the Pentagon, and he did work in research and development. So we know he did that. What we know is that he had personal notes, handwritten notes, that he gave to Bill Burns when Bill Burns was his co-writer for The Day After Roswell. We in Italy, because we brought him to Italy twice, Kevin, read his personal notes, and we published them in a book that can be found only in Italy called The Dawning of a New Age. It's in Italian. It's in Italian bookstores. Here in America, because there are some inconsistencies, this book tends to get debunked, and it's absolutely ridiculous. We knew Colonel Corso very well. We spent a lot of time with him in Italy. The deal was we were to bring him over with his grandchildren. And he told us that the reason why he took the courage to tell the truth about this, because this was a big benchmark in ufology, was for his grandchildren. And I don't think that someone who has that intention, he did not make any money off it. Basically, there was a lawsuit against the book, so that's why, they put a lawsuit, against the book, and that's why he couldn't speak in America. But from the things he was telling us that we were able to verify, Colonel Philip Corso was telling the truth. One of the arguments used, Kevin, and the reason why I'm going to tell you this, is that a lot of these things were being developed before the 1960s. Well, of course, because 1947, when that crash happened, there was only the Army. The Army Air Force came about in 1948. The Air Force, they branched off into two separate units, and I'm positive that there was back engineering probably going on with the Air Force, but they just don't have somebody talking about it. Too many people have come forth and said that the contracts came out of the Army.
All right. So from your point of view, Colonel Corso was telling the absolute truth.
Absolutely. The man had high integrity. He was the head of the CIC, which is the precursor of the CIA. Colonel Corso wrote three manuscripts. He wrote The Dawning of a New Age, which was changed into The Day After Roswell. He wrote The Day After Dallas, which is about the Kennedy assassination because he was on the Warren Commission. And the third book, which is The Man Who Saved Rome, which is all about the inception of the intelligence community in the CIA. It's the history of World War II in Rome. So the man is not just anybody off the street. He decided to come clean, and he told me several times he thinks the people can handle it. He says, especially the young people, he said, quit lying to them. Tell them the truth.
Well, I agree with that. I think we should tell people the truth. I think there are places on this planet where that is not going to be welcome, and there will be some chaos, but not in the developed world. In the developed world, people can handle this news.
Yeah, it's just, okay, the problem is, I don't know if you agree, there's so many problems in the world right now. The last thing they want to think about is UFOs. I mean, I don't think it's the government that's keeping the secret. I just think that people just can't handle, another thing. Because, for the government to come clean, and they don't probably know. I think it's the secret government or the military, industrial complex.
Okay, we'll get into that when we get back. We have to take a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Paola Harris. And actually, I'm not saying your name correctly. You say Paula, right?
Yeah, it's Paula, but in Italian it's Paola.
Paola. Okay. So I'll say something close, and that'll be good enough. Okay.
You can call me Paula. It's easy.
All right. Look, Colonel Corso his story is an amazing story. His story is that there was recovered extraterrestrial technology, and that at a certain point he was ordered to get it out to private industry and ask them to do whatever they could with it. And he did that. That's his story. Another person with a really fabulous story, just a phenomenal story, is Robert Dean. And I think you have had some I think you've had some contact with him. You were responsible for bringing him over to Italy. And did you get a chance to talk with Robert Dean much?
Oh, yeah. You know, when we'd bring them over to Italy, they'd stay at my home. I had an apartment in Rome, in downtown Rome. And so on three separate occasions, Robert came over, and he was in Rome. And I, you know, he's another military man. He was part of SHAPE, which is NATO headquarters in Belgium. And, you know, he makes a really good point. As a military man, he was caught in between because this was in the 60s, and they were seeing these strange craft coming over from Germany, and the Russians thought that they were our advanced technology, and we thought it was Russian advanced technology, and this is another reason why we need disclosure, because they almost, you know, started a war over it. I mean, we don't, if we don't know if it's Russian stuff, or Russians don't know if it's our advanced stuff, you know, it's very dangerous. So Robert Dean was you know, telling us about the problem they had at SHAPE headquarters, at NATO headquarters, with these photographs of these vehicles. So the vehicles are real. And the policy issues are, we could start a fake war over this if we don't know if it's their stuff or our stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I never met Colonel Corso. I have met Robert Dean in person, talked with him. He's been on the show, and he is a most impressive individual. When you hear these guys tell these really off-world stories, how does it strike you as a journalist? I mean, do you say?
It's really hard, Kevin. I don't know. Did you ever see anything? I mean, have you ever had a sighting or had any contact at all? Because I haven't.
Yeah, I've seen UFOs.
Well, see, you've seen some. You're luckier than me. I've never seen any, and so I have to just believe and use my power of discernment when I talk to these people. And you know, the military people that I talk to, you know, people like Edgar Mitchell, who's a good friend, and Clark McClellan. If you go on my website, Clark McClellan has an incredible statement on my website. He worked 22 years at NASA, and Colonel Corso, and Robert Dean, and Michael Wolfe, because Michael Wolfe was also one of my stories, and Charles Hall, who worked as a weatherman in Area 51 in 1965 and met aliens there. When I talk to these people, they're all military. You know, they're not lying, and they tell me these stories, and they're part of the disclosure process. I have, my job is just to report the story, to put it together word for word what they say, and then let people like you and whoever reads the books and whoever reads the articles decide. Because it's just so amazing to me.
Charles Hall, I've met him in person as well. And, you know, now, in fairness, I have to say it this way. There's no way that I have the ability to corroborate a story about something that happened in the middle of the desert back in the 1960s. On the other hand, we can corroborate the fact that he, Charles Hall, was in the U.S. Air Force. He was stationed at Indian Springs at the time he says he was. That we can corroborate. And then, you know, I'm sort of in the position you're in. Should somebody tell me something, then I need to try and sort of decide whether I think they're being truthful or not. Well, I'm trained in that. I'm an ex-cop, and I've spent years doing that. I was an investigator, and then I ran information and collection, or information collection and analysis. And so I'm trained to watch people and pick up on cues as to whether they're fabricating or whether they're telling the truth. And I have to say, both with Robert Dean and with Charles Hall, it appeared to me they were both being very truthful. And the stories are very fantastic, but I didn't pick up any of the cues of deception. You know, I think they were being truthful. And, you know, Robert Dean talks about the secret information that he saw when he was at NATO. And Charles Hall talks about meeting the tall whites and actually carrying on conversation with them. It's the kind of stuff you make movies out of. It's the kind of stuff you see in novels. And yet these guys say it's for real. They lived it. And and watching them as I talked with them, I did not pick up any of the cues that you normally pick up when someone is being deceptive. So I, you know, from my perspective, I think they're very truthful and honest gentlemen.
Well, you're making me feel better because that's what I picked up too. Now, in the case of Charles Hall, I did that story because I saw him and his wife selling books in Roswell, and then he proceeded, when he told me the story, I realized that he was not making anything up. He was remembering.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to take that story on with a an airline pilot who was a friend of mine. He's a captain for commercial airlines, and he and I did the story together because we flew Charles Hall to Indian Springs and had him recount his story there, right there at the Indian Springs race, and we videotaped him while he was telling us this story. And for, I imagine your listeners know it, but you know, he was the type of weatherman that was very cut and dry and reported all the you know, the wind and all the weather the weather kinds of statistics he was supposed to do. And, but the other weathermen on the base in 1965 were scared to death of something out there. And Charles, because he was very controlled, he passed a test in logic where he got a perfect score, was able to control himself enough to be able to be kind of a guinea pig for a human that would have an encounter with these beings. Now, I will add, Kevin, this is when we were doing the story, on, when I was on Coast to Coast, an LAPD policeman contacted me and asked if he could help, and we were able to find four other guys that worked with Charles to verify his story. So we had corroboration of the guys, but it was hard to find them because this is 40 years, you know, later, and the only person that can give me a hand with any of these stories are people in the police department or that people that can do the research. So when David Coot and I did the story, we had verification that Charles was telling the truth. Now, that's an amazing story because that is a real interaction with tall white aliens who had their children with them, and that is part of my book, Exopolitics. It's one of the protocols. How do you approach these people? You just don't go up to them and shake hands and say, howdy. I mean, you have to have some protocol because they're not human. They're not like us.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that Charles has told us on this show several times is that they don't process anger the way we do. And he said, you know, with us, a couple of guys get upset with each other and they have a fight. And then when the fight's over, they go have a drink together and become best friends. He said, that's not the way these tall whites do it. He said, if you make them angry, it's forever. And, you know, that can be dangerous.
Well, it is, because, you know, in his story, and his books are amazing. I guess he's got a fourth one out called Millennium Hospitality. You know, he talks about the fact that they have this weapon, this pen-like weapon, but if you do something, and he tells about a case there where one of the weathermen hurt one of the children because, you know, he said their bones are a lot more fragile, and I guess this guy threw a wrench. We talked to that guy, by the way. He was one of the guys we contacted, and he told us he threw a wrench at a white rabbit. So I don't know what kind of screen memory this guy had. But anyway, they were very angry with him, and they could have killed him. I mean, it was aggression. They don't look at aggression very well. But then, you know, they were guests on this base, and Another story that might be interesting to you, Kevin, though, is that we humans tend to freak out. And I had gone to Switzerland to see Billy Meyer, you know, the Billy Meyer case.
Uh-huh.
But I read in the Pleiadian case with Billy Meyer that the Pleiadians have a machine on board that measures your brain waves to see if you will freak out and if you are stable enough to have a contact. And they asked Billy over and over again not to bring any friends along because they couldn't handle it.
Well, if that's the case, then our government's oft-stated reason for not disclosing may have some merit, that they're afraid people will panic.
I agree, because, look, I mean, hasn't it been humanity? Don't they shoot first and ask questions later?
A whole lot of them do, yeah.
Isn't that what we do? And isn't that a reason why we better prepare if there is contact? It would be nice to prepare the younger generation or to prepare people of the future for possible contact?
Well, yeah, I think it would not be wise to shoot at these beings who can turn us into a smoldering cinder. I think it's not wise for us to shoot at them. And I think it would be perhaps a lot smarter for us to try and have a conversation with them. But now, in your research, you mentioned Dr. Wolf. We're coming up on a break. We're only a few seconds away from it. When we come back from that break, I want to talk about Dr. Wolf. He's another very controversial figure. He is a figure that some people say he's the absolute real deal, and other people say this guy is a fraud through and through, and there doesn't seem to be much middle ground. So I want to talk with you about that when you come back, or when we come back from this break, and we will return momentarily. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I'm Kevin Smith, your host, and my guest this evening is Paula Harris. Paula, you mentioned Dr. Michael Wolf. Now, that guy has been controversial since he first became known to the public. And there seems to be no middle ground with him. Either people either think he hung the moon or they think he is a total fraud. What's your take on Dr. Michael Wolf?
Well, you know, Karen, yeah, I agree with you 100%. He's the most controversial of my stories. But I got to honestly tell you that I did see him three times. I spent 3 days every time I go there. I was there for 3 days. I'd stay in a hotel. And the first time I went, I was very nervous because of the part of Hartford that he was living in. And so I went with my journalist friend from Italy, Adriano Sergeni. We went together to see Dr. Wolf, and we spent 3 days with him, and then we took his book, Catches of Heaven, back to Italy, and we translated it into Italian. And while we were doing this, Kevin, though, you should know that we got a visit from the intelligence community in Rome. They came into our offices at Saputo and said to us, you're doing a book on Dr. Wolf. And we said yes, and they said, well, you got to be careful because he worked for the intelligence community here in Rome, and he worked for the Mossad in Israel, and he was a double agent. So they told us he was real. And before I did the story, I asked permission of Jim Courant, who's an excellent researcher. He's a pilot for commercial, airlines also, and he had checked out Dr. Wolf with his contacts in the intelligence community, and they verified he was real. Now, the problem is his book reads like fiction because that's the only way he could put it out. And Dr. Wolf, a lot of the things that he was talking about were part of, he said, a slow process release of information. A lot of his predictions have come true, and a lot of people were interested in him, including some people from Canada that came to visit him and had ET experiences in his apartment. And I honestly have to tell you that the first time I went, when I went with Adriana, we did have some strange experiences in his apartment. When we left his apartment, we heard dolphin-type sounds behind us, so we didn't know what we were hearing. It was so strange. We heard these high-pitched dolphin sounds going down the elevator, and then they stopped when we went out of the building. And the day after we talked to Dr. Wolf, he asked us if we had seen the beings that had accompanied us out of his apartments. He said they were grays, and we didn't see them, but we certainly heard them. And we were, you know, we were very impressed by his telepathic ability, by his remote viewing ability, by his genius level. And I was able to photograph his credentials, and if the New York Academy of Sciences gives credentials to people off the street, then I don't think we should be looking at Dr. Wolf. I think we should be looking at the New York Academy of Sciences, because on the credentials that I photographed, he had PhDs on there.
Yeah. Paula, let me ask you to do this. Your telephone is really distorted, so if you just back off of the microphone or off of the mouthpiece just a little bit, I think we'll get a better audio.
Is this better?
It's much better.
Okay.
Yeah, much better. Okay, now, I have watched video of Dr. Wolf. It was sent to me, the video was sent to me by Dick Criswell, who is the founder and director of IPUS. And I've watched that several times. And I have to say that watching Dr. Wolf, if you didn't know about his credentials, it would cause you to raise some eyebrows, because he talks about some really phenomenal, strange stuff. And but as I said, a lot of people do. Pardon me, a lot of people that come on this show especially have very strange stories to tell. And I've said, I had an extremely controversial person on the show. One of the callers to the show said, but that, you didn't open up the phone line in the first hour. And I said, I never do. We do that in the second hour. Yeah, but that's not a normal guest. And my response was, none of my guests are normal. If they were normal and just everyday and mundane, what would you talk about? They have fantastic stories to tell. Some of them are truthful. Some of them perhaps are not so truthful. But what you're saying is that Dr. Wolf, it was verified to you by Vatican intelligence.
No, it wasn't Vatican. The Italian CIA, it's like the Italian intelligence community.
Okay, so they verified to you.
He had worked in Italy. He spoke perfect Italian, and that he was a double agent. Let me add one more thing, Kevin. One of the things that Dr. Wolf told us was that, and you could look on Boylan's website, too, he said that we had astronauts in deep space that were military astronauts on a platform in deep space. Well, that is exactly what Gary McKinnon is being processed for right now, because he went on internet looking for these astronauts. He got these names of they weren't NASA astronauts, they were military astronauts, exactly what Dr. Wolf said.
Yeah, but now I have to respond to that. Gary McKinnon is being will be prosecuted for unauthorized entry into government computers, and regardless of the reason you do that, it's illegal.
Absolutely, I agree, but that's what he found out.
Well, yeah, now that's what he says, and I think he will try to use that in his defense, I find it very, very interesting. But you know something now, Paula, back when I first started this show, This was 8 years ago. I was in Kosovo, and I did a show from Kosovo where I talked about the U.S. Army Space and Missile Defense Command. And all the information that I got off of their website. So they put it out there for the public. One of the things I found highly interesting on their website was the U.S. Army Space and Missile Defense Command had a corps of astronauts, and there was even an application online for pilots to apply to be transferred to the U.S. Army Space and Missile Defense Command as astronauts.
Wow.
Now, you know, that was on their website. That was right out in public. Now, I've been to the website since then. I talked about it on the show. I gave the web address. I've been back since then. I can't find that information on their website anymore. But it was
That's really
there.
Interesting.
They even had a list of the names of their astronauts. Isn't that something?
Well, this is all part of it, Kevin. It's you know, really complex.
Well, it is. And, of course, now we have the U.S. Air Force Space Command, and there are several space wings in under that command. And the thing that we get told in out in the public is that what they're doing is, you know, they're working with the satellites and moving the satellites around and focusing the satellites on various places to help the troops on the ground. I'm sure they do that. But I'm telling you, the U.S. Army Space and Missile Defense Command used to have on their website a list of their astronauts and even an application to become one. And that was online on their website.
Well, that's totally amazing. See, you know, and you see it's no longer there. You know, one of the things that we're finding out from having known Michael Wolff, and he died in the year 2000, is that a lot of the things he told us are coming true. And he was, you know, he was a genius. And I've never spoken to anybody that was that that intelligent and that scientific about his the way he expressed himself. And you know, the big argument about Michael Wolff is that he never graduated from college. But yet Michael told me the programs he was in. He was in Black Projects that helped him, you know, get this knowledge, and he worked in Black Projects. And I think Michael wouldn't make that up. I mean, those of us that actually met him in person, including my colleague Adriano from Italy and Jim Courant and a lot of other people that actually met him in person, you know, you said you look for veracity when you look at somebody, their eyes, their body language and so forth. I mean, we felt he was telling the truth. I think his debunkers or his detractors never met him. And I could never make a judgment on somebody that I had never met in person.
Well, that's true. And, of course, I didn't meet him in person. I've seen him on tape. But there are certain things you look for in body language if a person is being deceptive. And it's not 100% correct, but it's about 85% correct. And he looked to me like he was telling the truth. But it was an amazing story. All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back. We'll open up the telephone lines for you when we come back. And we are back. The telephone lines are open. And also the flash line. Paula, what we when you hear me talk about the flash line, what we're talking about is for people that live outside of the United States and Canada, we have they can just send me an email. I have a special link for that, and ask their questions. And I've got one here from the United Kingdom. From the United Kingdom, let's see. It says, "Do you believe, Ms. Harris, that disclosure will ever be voluntary by governments that, according to you, according to your evidence, have deliberately withheld ET technology that could have saved lives in, for example, Afghanistan and Iraq. I can assure Ms. Harris that as a British subject, I am not allowed to know the details of cutlery in the Houses of Parliament restaurants, let alone whether we have ET tech. So what do you think about that?
Oh, I don't think that a disclosure will ever come from any government, no. However, I will say that the UK, since the caller is from UK or the person is from the UK, is doing a good job at least releasing its Ministry of Defense files and making them public. And I think France is doing a good job with the Cometa report. And Mexico City is doing a good job with their, you know, film footage that they're releasing. And a lot more people are coming forth from other countries saying that UFOs exist. I don't think the United States has even gotten to the point where they admit that these things exist.
You know what? Now, I sort of catch the United States, various agencies, admitting things sometimes. And I don't think they intended to. But, you know, if you look at the Project Blue Book, which, of course, was somewhat of a whitewash, but if you look at Project Blue Book, yes, it does say that the vast majority of the cases they investigated could be easily explained by natural means. But there was a percentage, I think it was about 10 or 12%, that they could not explain away. That is an admission that there are unidentified flying objects. So you, without saying, yes, they're real, they admitted that they were real.
Yeah, they do. The problem is, you know, when you get a situation like in 76 with the missile shutdown at Malmstrom Air Force Base, you know, Robert Salas, who was there, Captain Robert Salas was there in charge of those 10 missiles, and they were all, in, you know, deactivated. I mean, when we have a situation like that, and it's real, and it's documented, and we have files on that, I think that, plus the O'Hare sighting last year in 2007, is enough. Just those two things is enough to look into this seriously. I think most people would agree with that. Why don't we just look into it and study it? And those kinds of things are also matters of national security. I mean, are we going to say it's okay for some strange object to be over an airport?
Well, apparently, because the FAA said it was probably just a weather anomaly.
Well, I think MUFON did a great job, and also the NARCAP people, the pilot people, you know, Richard Haynes and Ted Rowe, those guys, they did a great job in looking at the you know, all the research around that. That was real. That was a real situation. It was not a weather anomaly. People saw it from the United Airlines terminal. Pilots photographed it as they were coming down. You know, we have too much testimony that saw a real craft. Now, the story is not whether it's real. It's whether it's our stuff or their stuff.
Yeah, you're exactly right. All right, let me give the telephone number. It is 602-539-3316. 602-539-3316. For those of you who have a question or a comment for Paula Harris, Paula, let me bring this back up on my screen here. We have a message from Australia, and it says, this question is for you. How far back in history, so far as your knowledge goes, has the Vatican known about UFOs and ETs? Is it recent, or does this knowledge go back for a very long time?
Well, I'll take the opportunity to talk about my website. It's www.paolaharris.com. If you go to my website, there's all kinds of Renaissance paintings that have UFOs in them. There's a website that has these paintings, and they go way back to the Renaissance. There's a famous one in Florence that was done by the Filippo Lippi school, and now it's so popular because it's that famous, you know, UFO where the dog and the shepherd is barking up in the sky. Well, you know, they're calling that the Madonna of the UFO now in Florence. We went to see it with Dr. John Mack. So, I mean, I think if the religious paintings are having these anomalies a long time ago, and, you know, we're looking at all kinds of archaeological mysteries, like the plains of Nazca in South America, the pyramids, and a lot of the things that are built around astronomy, the stars, and we're looking at these things that I think probably we've been visited for eons of time. And I think, of course, the Vatican knows. All top power structures in the world know. I mean, the fact that the Vatican came out in May 13th, which is the anniversary of Fatima, and had its the chief of its observatory say it's okay to believe in ETs, that Christ probably didn't die for them because they weren't born with original sin, that they could be our brother and sister. I mean, that to me is totally amazing. I just wrote a story about that for Fate magazine. So the Vatican didn't have to do that. It's covering its tracks for some events, Kevin. I don't know if you feel the same way, that may happen in the future.
Well, yeah. And, you know, if you watch, there are a lot, not just the Vatican, but I mentioned the U.S. government. There are a lot of statements by agencies of the U.S. government that if you watch them, you can see that they have set themselves up to be able to point back to these statements and say, well, folks, we told you, weren't you listening? Here it is.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that is probably the case with the Vatican as well. Now, see, a lot of people don't know this, Paula, but you do because you've lived there. When we say the Vatican, there, while it is true that the Vatican is the home, one of the homes, and the primary home, I guess, of the Pope, and he is the head of the Roman Catholic Church.
Head of the Roman Catholic Church.
Head of the Roman. Well, I don't know what happened there. We got some feedback. All right, but he is the Pope. He's the head of the Roman Catholic Church. There is this component, and that is that the Vatican is a state, and it is a government. And then there is the Roman Catholic Church, which is the religious side. But there is the governmental side as well. They have ambassadors. They are called, I believe, enuncios. It is a government. As well as there is the religious side where it is a church. So they have, the Vatican has, their own intelligence services. They have virtually everything that any government would have. They have a bank. And so that state that we call the Vatican is in possession of all of the ancient records that were possessed by the Roman Catholic Church. And so they probably have some tremendous insight into this UFO thing from ancient records.
Well, that's probably true. I mean, I think that's true. I think that there's a lot of, you know, records out there about visitations. And I think, you know, anymore, I think it's not even in our hands anymore. I think that if we're going to have some serious earth changes, and if we're going to have some changes in you know, planetary structures, I think that whoever's visiting is interested in that. And we're going to have more sightings and more visitations, and I think all major states and major governments are interested in this.
Yeah, I think so. And I think just about all of them that know anything about UFOs and about extraterrestrials are positioning themselves, as you say, to be able, you know, to sort of shield themselves in the future. Some of them are really doing it like right up front, and you mentioned the Cometa report from France. Now, that has not, to my knowledge, been translated in its entirety into English. There are portions of it that have been, but I don't think it has entirely been translated into English. And that report is a real eye-opener. Have you read the Cometa report?
Yes, I have, and I know some of the people who worked on that. The truth is that it was done by the military, you know, and the final part of that report, they asked the United States, could they please come clean, because we have here in this country a lot of the proof. And they say, well, without, you know, your cooperation, you know, the United States cooperation, it's very difficult. Now, Kevin, my dream is I have two things that I'd love to see happen. One, that the United Nations take this on, because I think it shouldn't be, if we have visitations, it should not be one country that takes this on. I mean, what, do they go to China because they have the most people? I mean, that's not the way it should be. It should be a representation of everybody on Earth, all the countries on Earth. And number two, I think this exopolitics, and that's what I'm involved in the most, should be taught in universities. I think that the history of ufology plus the history of all the real, you know, sightings and so forth we've had should be studied at the university level, so we get this done seriously without the ridicule factor that's attached to it.
Well, let me ask you this. Have you ever seen have you ever seen the inner workings of a United Nations peacekeeping mission?
No, I haven't.
Well, if you had, I don't think you would recommend that it be the United Nations that take it on. There's going to have to be something better than that. It is an absolute chaotic mess. And it's better, it's a lot better than a war, but it is a horrendous mess in a United Nations peacekeeping mission. Let me say this, it could be done better and still be the United Nations. But in order to do it better, they have to stop being worried about everybody's little picky things that they might get offended with, and just do the job.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. This is Steve in Fort Worth.
Yeah, Steve.
I was going to ask Ms. Harris a question. You know, Timothy Good written extensively on the Rendlesham Air Force Base incident, and also Larry King also had three eyewitness people that gave testimony to what they saw at the Air Force Base, and either account ever, they never said that there was ever any alien presence, and I highly regard anything that Timothy Good writes, but I'd like to know where she got that information and why it hasn't never been in the main media.
Okay, and then after she responds, I'll respond as well.
Okay, thank you.
You need to read a book by Peter Robbins called Left at Eastgate.
We lost him. I guess he'll listen as you answer.
Okay, yeah. This is his answer. He needs to read a book by Peter Robbins called Left at Eastgate. It's very thick, but it's on the Rendlesham Forest case, and it has the testimony of Larry Warren, who was present there, who was a military man, too. And he was present during the landings. Now, on the Larry King show, though, if you see the testimony of Pendleton, he was the one who drew all the pictures and touched the craft. And Pendleton's actual testimony is in a DVD called Out of the Blue. And James Fox, who is the producer, is a close friend of mine. I brought him to Italy, too. And James Fox told me that Pendleton had, when he touched the craft and so forth, you know, and was very aware that there were beings inside. And when he touched it and walked around it and drew pictures of it and the hieroglyphics, the thing had landed right in front of him. So yes,
there's a lot more
that we don't know, and the people that were there are the only ones that can tell us. So one of the books that you should read is Left Cityscape by Peter Robbins.
Also, Jim Peniston has been on this show, and so his testimony is in our archives, in our we call it K-Pods, in our podcasts, in our members area. And, you know, the testimony that it was extraterrestrial, I asked him about it. I said, was there any doubt in your mind that this thing was extraterrestrial? He said, no doubt whatsoever. And he talked about walking up to it, touching it, drawing the sketches and the hieroglyphics, and it pretty amazing story. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. Caller has lost the opportunity. All right. The telephone number is 602-539-3316, 602-539-3316. If you're outside of the United States or if you're outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message. You do that by going to my website, click where it says flash message, and that's right under the telephone number, which is in big green letters that are about 4 feet tall. And so you'll be able to see it there. All right, let's go back to the telephone. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Caller, are you going to speak? I guess not. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan in Puget Sound.
Yeah, Ryan.
Yeah, Paul, I had a question. I saw a few years ago. You met Dr. Michael Wolff, right?
Right.
I think that you had some time with him. I was wondering, what can you tell us about him? I mean, how were you able to meet with him if he was he was involved in so many secrets and stuff. Can you tell us anything about him that was so interesting? Like, what about him? Can you tell us anything about him that we might not know already? And what was his involvement and everything like that?
Okay, that's a fascinating story. And, you know, I'm going to write a book about him shortly in the next couple of years because I have 70 audio tapes. He used to call me in Rome and ask me to tape everything he said. You know, Dr. Wolff was very strange. If I had to say that maybe he could have been, you know, heavily, you know, altered, I would say he was. I mean, he reminds me of Uri Geller. Uri Geller is another one of my friends, and Uri Geller does some strange things. And Dr. Wolff, I think, was in the remote viewing program. He was contacted when he was 3 years old. He had an experience with his brother where they saw a UFO and they found Michael wandering around in the forest. And the thing is, he was never the same. He became very, very, he had a high intelligence quotient. He became very intelligent, almost genius-like, and that happens to a lot of contactees. And I think somebody knows about that, and they invite them to be part of either remote viewing, advanced science, or in Michael's case, he started out working for the CIA. He knew everything about the CIA, and I even met somebody who volunteered that he had seen Michael within the halls of the CIA. And Michael did double agent work, but because Michael had the remote viewing skills, and remember, remote viewing means advanced ESP, Michael did a lot of that kind of work. How was I able to meet him? Because he was sick. When I met him the last 2 years, he was in bed. He was dying of pancreatic cancer, and he made a real effort to disclose what he could. He would tell the military part to Dr. Boylan. He would tell the spiritual part to me. I have a DVD of him giving spiritual message to the world, and he also gave us pieces of a UFO. If you read my book, Connecting the Dots, in that there's an interview by Dr. Michael Smith Dr. Michael Wolf, I'm sorry, and an analysis of a piece of a UFO he had given to Michael Hesman in Germany and to me to bring to Italy, and the piece that he gave us was 99% silicon and 1% extraterrestrial. He had access to a lot of people, important people, because he did remote viewing. I mean, he even told me he did remote viewing on Bin Laden. So he was a very enigmatic person. You know, a lot of strange things happened around him, and he reminded me a lot of Uri Geller. People know who he is.
All right. Let me go to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
I'm Mark from Pennsylvania.
All right. Let me tell you, we have a break coming up in just a few. Well, there it is. Are you willing to hang on through the break?
Sure.
All right. Hang on. We'll get you first up after the break. All right, folks. We'll be back more with Paula Harris and our callers right after this. All right, we are back. It's the Kevin Smith Show. I'm the Kevin Smith, your host. We're talking with Paula Harris. And caller, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, what about our caller?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Go ahead with your comment or question, caller.
Lately we've been seeing things in like Arizona, the lights in Arizona. And my question to her is, could it possibly be that some of these craft that we're seeing could be ours and not totally extraterrestrial?
Good question. What about that, Paula?
Absolutely. I mean, you hit on a really important thing. That's why we need to study this, and that's why I need to talk about it. We need to know if we're on a space war, if we're shooting at our own stuff. You know, it's very, very important that we know. However, you're talking about the Phoenix Lights, and I don't think it would be very wise for, you know, our military to be flying something that size over the skies of Phoenix. I was just at Area 51, and if you go on my website, I spoke at Alamo in Nevada near Area 51, and I photographed a light that's on my website and that I think could be probably a craft. And I think that if you're going to test something, you test it out in the middle of Nevada where nobody sees it. You don't fly it over a major city, and you don't fly it over Stephenville, Texas. I mean, that isn't bright. That isn't very intelligent if you're flying stuff. Or you don't fly it over O'Hare Airport. So I tend to believe that the Arizona sighting was real. It happened over and over. I have some film footage that a security guard gave me of those lights, and they're over a part of the Arizona mountains called the Estrella Mountains, which means stars, and the Native Americans seem to think that there's a dimensional gate or a porthole there. So a stargate.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a whole other thing.
For those of you that watch our video, caller, thanks for the call. Did you have another question or comment?
The stealth aircraft.
I'm sorry?
And that was they flew that around. A lot of people thought that was a UFO. They were UFOs, but they're very similar in shape. And that's why I have a question about that.
But they flew that in Nevada. They're not flying that over major cities. They flew that in Nevada.
And also the size is nowhere near the size of these things. Like the Phoenix Lights.
Well, that was huge. The Phoenix Lights, is not our stuff, and it's so darn controversial, and it happened several times. So, yeah, I really believe the Phoenix Lights is extraterrestrial. And it was there for a reason. I think Phoenix is a very special place.
Caller, where did you say you're calling from?
I'm calling from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
All right. Have you ever called us before?
No, sir.
You're a first-time caller. Well, you know what happens. You get some applause out of that. Thanks for the call, man. All right. Telephone number is 602. I can't remember it. 602-539-3316. Hey, I've got a lot of stuff to watch here. I can't remember all the telephone numbers. 602-539-3316. If you have a question or comment, Paula, the truth is that we do have a lot of exotic aircraft, experimental aircraft, and it could be, although I don't think this is the case, it could be that the reason that the if let's say the Phoenix Lights really was our aircraft, let's just say that for the sake of argument, if that's the case, it could be that they flew it over a populated area to test and see what would be the public response and reaction to it. But I don't think so. And the reason I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Also, because the orbs that they saw, there was a big, you know, V-shaped. Then they also saw some orbs attach and detach and disappear. The people that saw that seemed to have had some kind of emotional or spiritual reaction to it. And I think when it's our stuff like the stealth, I think you're just looking at it as an aircraft. But sometimes some of these sightings have some of that emotion attached to it. In other words, the people, they were struck by it. It changed their lives.
But maybe that is what they wanted to test.
Did the DVD on the Phoenix Lights has all these people whose lives were changed by that sighting.
But maybe that's what they wanted to test.
Well, yeah, and can I add another thing too, Kevin? There's a book by Shirley MacLaine wrote this year called Aging While Saging, and she talks about Dr. Michael Wolff in the book, and she talks about Philip Corso in the book, but that she also talks about the fact that she and Kucinich, who was a candidate for president, were sitting at her patio in New Mexico when they had a sighting, but she adds it wasn't just a simple sighting, the thing landed. And that's why she brought that up, with Matt Lauer on television. Now, I think Shirley MacLaine has done more for the cause, like Larry King Live, and James Fox out of the blue. Those guys are, for me, the quarterbacks that are bringing this to the goal line. I mean, for me, it doesn't matter who does it. I mean, I'm hoping this thing will get done and we'll score a goal here, because all of us researchers that have been working for all these years want to see the truth out.
Yeah, let me ask you to back off of the telephone again just a moment, because it's kind of distorting again. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
I just wondered if this closure does go through, besides the right for us to know, how do you guys think that's going to affect the way they interact with us or we interact with them? And I'll take it off the line. Thank you.
Okay. What do you think, Paula?
Well, what do you think, Kevin?
I don't think it will have any effect on their reaction to us, but I think disclosure has to happen prior to open contact in order to mitigate people's emotions. One of the things I talk about on this show a lot, and I take a lot of heat for it too, is that people don't think. They emote. They feel. We no longer live in a thinking society. It's all about touchy-feely, warm and fuzzy. And so they feel. And because they feel afraid or scared or offended, they react. And because of that, we also now have entire defense cases defenses in court based on, well, my client was afraid. My client was terrified, and it's all about feeling, trying to mitigate responsibility for action. And the problem with that is, if feelings had been in the equation, there never would have been a United States of America. If feelings had been in the equation, we never would have gone to the moon. Because people would have been afraid. They would have felt afraid of going. And so I think disclosure has to happen to some degree in order to mitigate the feeling of the populace. And yes, I am saying that in a way that is offensive to those who feel. Because I think
this isn't about feeling. This is about telling the truth. And Robert Dean says something really beautiful. He says, when we find out the truth, we'll find out who we are, where we come from, what the cosmos is like. And I love his way of looking at this. Now, I will add one thing. I agree with you, Kevin. I never blame governments. I blame people because I do a lot of lectures all over the world. And the people that are most comfortable, the people that have everything are not worried about UFOs. They say it just clouds their mind. They don't care whether there's disclosure because they've got other things in their lives.
Yeah.
Europe is a lot more open to that because they look at philosophy, they look at cosmology, they look at science, and they're a lot more curious. And I think a lot of times that disclosure won't come about because the people are not the ones that will insist. It's never going to come from governments. It's going to come from grassroots efforts. And until all the people decide that they want to know, it's never going to come out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller.
Kevin.
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay, I can barely hear you. But this is Jason from Macon, Georgia.
Okay, Jason.
A question I had for Paula and also maybe for you also was that, you know, there's got to be something that happens to somebody to maybe dedicate their lives. I don't want to say it like that. You know, dedicate their lives to it. But, you know, to bring them out to write books and talk about these situations that all of a sudden, I mean, to me it happened. I mean, I remember when I was in high school, nothing really, I didn't see a UFO or anything, but I remember writing, like, book reports on UFOs and stuff like that. But there was something that just, you know, came up that, you know, I started paying attention to these things. And so was there any, I guess for your guest tonight, is there anything in particular that just got her going on this whole subject and maybe dedicating her life to this?
Good question. All right, what about that, Paula?
Well, I never had an experience, but, you know, Close Encounters did it for me as far as opening the door, whether it was true or not. But I need to tell you that my job is simply to report word for word what the credible people have told me about this phenomenon. I have a master's in education. I'm a teacher. I've been teaching for 30 years. I've been teaching English and history, and I think that my soul is dedicated to truth and to curiosity, and I think what I feel is that I've always looked up in the sky, known that we humans are more than we pretend to be. We're not flesh and bones, and we're flesh, bones, spirit, soul, and maybe we belong to the stars. So that's the part that I'm looking at. I'm looking at what our role is in the cosmos. It's bigger than we are.
I agree. I think that we are, not only are we more than just flesh and bones, we're more than what we mean when we say we're human. It's more than that. All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away.
Nothing in our lives is as important as people. You know that. And one of the best ways to express your appreciation and love to those very important people in your life is to send them a bouquet of beautiful fresh flowers. Like everything else these days, the prices at the florist shops have been on the rise. Add to that the cost of gasoline to get to the shops, and sending flowers can be, well, expensive. But not when you use the excellent services of our friends at 1-800-Flowers. Shop online and save 100% of your gasoline costs. Plus, you get great prices for beautiful arrangements, as little as $24.95. And you also can get same-day delivery. Visit 1-800-Flowers in the KSS Mall at kevinsmithshow.com. Send beautiful, fresh flowers to that someone special today.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com. We are back, and we are on final approach. That means we only have a few minutes left, and then we'll be at the end of the show for tonight. Paula, I visited your website, and you've got lots of good information there and some very interesting photographs. There is, folks, as usual, a link right beside Paula's picture on my website. There is a link to her website. But Paula, if you will, give us your web address again.
Okay, it's www.paolaharris.com.
PaolaHarris.com. And as I said, folks, it's right there. There's a link right beside her picture on my website. It's well worth the visit, too. You need to go over there and check it out. Paula, out of all of the things that are going on around the world right now, and you're sitting sort of at the nexus of information, I mean, you're investigating stuff, you're researching stuff. What, to you, is the biggest deal happening with UFOs and extraterrestrials right now?
Well, actually, if you go to my website, you'll see there's an interview with Edgar Mitchell, Apollo 14 astronaut, where he really comes out and says that that he has been briefed, that we have had visitations, we have had crashes, that there is an extraterrestrial presence. And then on my website, there is also the testimony of Clark McClellan, who worked at NASA for 22 years, and he claims, and you'll see the design there, that he saw an extraterrestrial 10-foot tall talk to two of our astronauts in the payload of the shuttle. So, I mean, you know, here's NASA slowly opening the doors. Richard Hoagland with Dark Mission. We're putting, you know, the vacuum's coming out. NASA probably will talk a little bit about Mars. Slowly, from the back rooms, all over the world, there's going to be a lot more information.
Edgar Mitchell was on the show. I invited Clark McClellan to come on the show. He declined. And, you know, I'm what I'm about to say is not because I'm angry. I'm just reporting. I'm not. I don't get angry if somebody declines. But he says that he doesn't do talk shows, although I think he probably has done one or two. I have heard that he has.
He doesn't do them, Kevin. I think he's very freaked out and paranoid about his disclosure. He's very closed in his own place. And in the past he's talked, but he doesn't now. And I think his website tells it all.
Mm-hmm. There are people, and those of you who have real lives, can't imagine this, but there are people who do nothing all day but engage in email debate. And it would amaze you some of the names involved in that. And they sit around all day trying through email, through these email debates with other people, trying to prove that they are the expert on this topic. And unfortunately, I get forwarded all that stuff, and there's a bunch of those going on. The thing that happens in these email debates is a whole lot of dissing of various researchers and investigators. I haven't seen your name come up. And, you know, where they're dissing you and saying you don't know what you're talking about and blah, blah, blah. I haven't seen that. How would you account for that? How did you miss out on all that?
Actually, I'm not going to mention the names because I will never, ever criticize my colleagues ever. But I have the Colonel Corso story. I've been at three conferences where there have been people trying to debunk Colonel Corso. And online, when I talk about Michael Wolff, I've never had so much criticism. And because I'm a woman, Kevin, it's very difficult. They said that I shouldn't get involved in my stories. However, my stories are because I've visited the people. I haven't done telephone interviews. I know the people, and like you, I've spent time with them.
Yeah, it's and that is a difference. And also, when you do that, you cannot say that just because I met Charles Hall and talked with him that I am involved with his story. That is a fallacy. A good reporter wants to talk face to face with as many of his sources as possible. And so, when you talk with as you did with Michael Wolff, when you talk with Philip Corso, that doesn't mean that you are getting involved with the story. That means you're getting the story.
Yeah, I think of myself like Barbara Walters, you know, like the cosmic Barbara Walters. I'm reporting the story for you and all your listeners. And mm-hmm. I put the word-for-word interviews in my books. I mean, in Connecting the Dots, I have everybody in there, from David Icke to Richard Hoagland to Linda Moulton-Howe to Monsignor Balducci. And it's word-for-word what these people tell me.
Yeah. Dear, I need you to back off that telephone. It is really blasting the paint off.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Is that better?
Much better. You've got a very sensitive mic in that telephone. I think people need to understand that. It's not getting involved with the story when you meet these people. It is getting the story. And but it amazes me in this whole genre of UFOs, ufology, how many people think that if you talk, for instance, they've decided that Michael Wolff is a fraud. So if you talk to Michael Wolff and then report on what he said, you're somehow promoting the fraud. And, you know, it is that kind of close-minded nonsense that has led America to the brink of destruction, because it's not only in ufology, it is in every area of our lives. People have made up their minds, and by God, if you bring up anything that doesn't jive with what they have made up their mind is the truth, then you are the enemy. And folks, you know, if you listen to this show, you're going to be offended. Sooner or later, you're going to be offended, because I will not back off of that. I believe in freedom of thought, freedom of speech, and you're going to hear controversial stuff. That's the only way you can get to the bottom of, is it true or not? You know, it is controversial to talk about absolutely anything. It really is. If you're going to get to the truth of it, it's going to be controversial. And if you're going to exercise freedom of speech, Paula, sooner or later you're going to be offended, because freedom of speech guarantees someone will say something that offends you. Sooner or later.
Well, more than offended, we may not.
Yeah, I hate to do it, but have to cut you off and me off. We've hit the end of the show. Man, this has just been wonderful. Paula, thanks for being with us. I hope you'll be with me again. Stay on the phone line with me for a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, Paula Harris. My name is Kevin Smith. My friends call me Steel Eye. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until tomorrow, so long, everybody.